Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We're back, it's Thursday, and this is the Luke and Pete Show. How the devil are you?
Get involved.
Get involved.
Get at it. Get amongst it.
Get on it.
Yeah, what's going on, Pete? What's new?
Not a lot, really. I've had a rather full week prepping for the Football Ramble Live, baby. We're in Hackney tonight. If you're listening on a Thursday, that's ramblelive.com. If you'd like to see us.
It might be a handful of tickets left for tonight's show, but there'll probably be some left for Saturday night at Alexandra Palace. Do check it out, ramblelive.com.
Saturday's more fun, though. It's bigger, isn't it?
Yeah, bigger night.
A lot of fun.
We're talking about Ramble Live a lot, purely because I think this is the tour that we've done where we've put so much prep into it. Like, normally, the live show started out, I should say, by the way, this is episode 199.56.
It almost doesn't even bear thinking about.
No, it doesn't. And it's Thursday, what day are we on today? 26th of September. When we started out doing Ramble Live, it just used to be the four of us sat behind desks talking about football. Mm. And I think if we take a moment to stop and smell the roses, the show has evolved to such an extent. And we haven't played live for over two years.
Is that right?
Yeah, because last time we played was after the FA Cup final in 2017, I think.
Wow.
And the show we've planned this time is big and it's going to be great. And we want you to come along. So yeah, do come along if you've got a chance. But that's been taking up the bulk of my time this week as well. Mm. I was doing all kinds of local radio press. Have you done any of that?
No, I haven't. I've done like ISDN lines and stuff.
Yeah, so what they do is, what they did for us is you go into...
I have done that, a little vestibule in like BBC Centre or something.
Wogan House it's called now. And they put you in a room and you sit with headphones on and the different radio stations from around the country dial in.
Yeah.
And every so often you just get a, hello, is that Luke? You go, yeah, it's me. All right, it's Johnny from BBC Radio Northampton, how are you doing?
Mm.
Like that, and then you do your thing.
It's weird, isn't it? It's rather abstract that you're just in a room like a... It's how most local radio... It's how most radio's done, really. Just in a booth, in an ISDN.
I always find local radio people like a different breed as well.
They're certainly lovelier.
They're friendlier.
They're more giving.
They've got proper radio voices as well.
Yeah.
Which I've never had.
I was listening to a guy who... I'm not going to say what team or what podcast, but it was a team-based football podcast, because I liked it every now and again, because you can't it was one of the South Coast teams, and I was like, I wonder what they're saying about this, and he was being wonderfully cheesy, like some people when they get on the radio or get on a podcast, they think that they have to adopt a certain style and you have to be slick and you have to be smooth and you have to keep it going. You do kind of have to keep it going, but you don't have to necessarily be cheesy.
No. we're not naturally cheesy, though, are we, you and I? We're more naturally cynical, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, No, not even cheesy, just kind of like trying to be like, you know, satirical, but taking like a sideways glance at something and trying to be a bit cool for school. And it's like, wow, you're not going to... That's not going to last you.
We went for years with people referring to us on the Ramblers... Oh, they take a sideways glance at football.
Yeah. How do you take a sideways glance at anything?
Not sure. You're doing it now, though. I suppose we're taking a sideways glance at life on this show, aren't we, really?
I guess we are, yeah.
One thing you have to be good at when it comes to radio, particularly talk radio, is you've got to be good at doing three or four things at once, and you've got to be good at half listening to like different conversations at the same time, because you've got someone over there making a point live on radio.
Yeah.
You've got to listen to that. You've got to listen to your producer in your ear telling you what's coming next. You've got to read something on the screen. You've got to think about who you're bringing in next and what you're going to say. It's so much stuff to remember. And the people who do it well, I would say Mark Chapman on the BBC is the best of us at these. They just make it sound totally effortless.
Mm. And also pace changes as well, if you're sort of talking about
that's hard,
a cricket score to a death to something else, more current affairs.
That is very tough. Speaking of death, I sort of related. I went to the Churchill War Rooms.
Mm.
Have you been?
No.
I would recommend it, man. People listening who've been will know exactly what I mean.
Well, I like dated technology, so I imagine there's probably a bit of that in there.
You'll absolutely love it. You'd love that then. I mean, the story of the Churchill War Rooms is quite interesting because, of course, Churchill went down there and decided that he was going to conduct the Second World War from there. Well, it's just over the back of Whitehall.
Mm.
And
it's all over the back of Whitehall.
But what happened at the end of the war, as far as I can make out, and they certainly make out this is the case in the museum itself, in like August 45, I suppose, around VJ Day, everyone left, closed the door, that was it.
See you later.
Didn't go back in.
Mm.
They didn't go back in until the 80s. So when the people went in, I think that maybe the Imperial War Museum Company or whatever got hold of it, went in there. It was so well preserved that one of the officers in there's sugar rations was still on the desk or in the drawer or something.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly preserved. So they cleaned it all up.
Fantastic.
Made some adjustments and then they've opened it up to the public. It's a fascinating place. If you like two things you'll need to enjoy it. Old technology is definitely one of them. Mm. Second, maps. Maps everywhere.
Lots of maps, yeah.
Massive, massive maps everywhere. And some of them have got like doodles on them when they've taken the piss. So on one of the big maps on one of the walls, someone in pencil has drawn like a brilliant cartoon of Hitler drowning in the Atlantic. Yeah, it's quite funny. There's loads of good stuff in there. There's the place where Churchill would sleep. There's a place where he would go and do radio broadcasts to the nation, which would go filtered through Broadcasting House. There's these things called scramblers. Because the technology is so primitive, they'd have all these different coloured phones that would just ring and they would answer them or whatever.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to send important information, they use these phones called scramblers. And what they are they look like an old-fashioned dial phone. Mm. The numbers obviously would do what they called like a circular dial phone.
Yeah.
But they're attached
rotary.
Rotary phone. They're attached to a massive briefcase, like the size of that cabinet.
Mm.
And they scramble the signal.
Scramble.
Yeah. Imagine all the stuff you have to remember.
And it all analog as well. There's no microchips involved here. Just analog shit.
And the
tubes.
The little room with where he would broadcast to the nation. I mean, the hardware is probably 6 feet high.
I bet it got warm.
Boxes of but it did.
But it got warm.
I'm fairly certain they pioneered some kind of air conditioning down there.
Really?
Yeah, because there's primitive air conditioning everywhere as well.
Mm.
And that there's little sucker tubes where they put little notes through to each other's rooms.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that as well. It's a fascinating place.
I was in McDonald's this morning getting a flat white. And there was a...
That's your kind of war room, isn't
it?
That's where you conduct a lot of your operations.
It's where I conduct war on my own body. there was this... it's on Oxford Street. They've got this weird kind of system where I think the kitchens are downstairs or upstairs. And they've got like what I'm going to call a paternoster, which is a lift that just continues.
Which
up
branch?
And down, up and down Oxford Street. Oxford Street, in the middle of Tottenham Court Road and Oxford Street. There's got this interesting kind of lift that takes food up and down, and down. And when it comes down, the teeth intersect with another set of teeth and your little... chicken McNugget score flies off it. It's a thumbing thrift thing, and it just means that the footprint of the actual McDonald's can be actually quite small.
Is it pleasing to watch it in action?
It's very pleasing. I always thought that's going to smash all our food. No, it gently takes it off the leaf.
Would you be
gently takes it off the leaf? I'll take that sunshine.
Yeah,
it's going to end up in Pete's belly
like a butterfly landing.
Like a butterfly landing. It's beautiful.
Would you be interested in being in Churchill war rooms with Churchill just smoking endless cigars down there?
No,
the worst thing is all of them are smoking. There's ashtrays everywhere.
Can you just cut that out, please?
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible.
Good news is we didn't get bombed. The bad news is I've got quite advanced lung cancer.
Emphysema.
Yeah. Emphysema, yeah.
Speaking of abandoned buildings, I've discovered a bloke from the northeast. I'm not really sure what part of the northeast he's from. He's sort of around our, in between us and sort of Sunderland.
I've seen this, yeah.
So he goes around and he's broken into a couple of buildings in Hartlepool, which I'm very interested in. The Hill Carter Hotel was a hotel that opened kind of, I think, late 90s, around the turn of the millennium. And it was like this big deal. There's another hotel in town. We've got the Grand Hotel. Now we've got the Hill Carter. And it was like only like 10 or 11 rooms on Church Street near the train station. Beautiful location, beautiful old building. Or I think did the court used to be there? It doesn't matter. Anyway, beautiful building. And it was Dovecot, I think. Anyway, and it was...
You're all right, mate.
Just going down memory lane. Sorry, everyone. So he's broken in there and he's just walking around. There's a nightclub bit that I used to go to a fair bit. There was a... all of the old rooms and stuff, and he's sort of broken in and just walked around. And like, he's done the same to the Odeon, which was a building that I spoke about before. It's this big Art Deco, kind of slightly Art Deco building. from the 50s, I think. And we've not had a decent cinema. We've got like a Odeon on the marina, but it's very commercial. You can only get like the most popular films, like, you know, your Fast and Furious and stuff like that. It could do with having like a better cinema somewhere. But this Odeon cinema's been there for years, and it's a beautiful building, but they've just let it rot. They're like, the ceiling's coming in, there's water everywhere, but this guy's just walking around, and he's not a particularly good narrator. But no. I do recommend Odeon Hartlepool. Give it a search on YouTube, and maybe we'll tell you out a video. He just walks around, and the main things people have broken in for, and they've stripped out aluminium and stuff, and stripped out the expensive stuff. But the main thing that people keep breaking into buildings and Hartlepool, just booze, just bottles, like single bottles of Stella. They're just having them away, and they'll all be out of date because the Hill Cart are closed a couple of years ago.
He's he's not a very good, like, he's obviously quite good at breaking into places, but he's not a very good narrator. No. Every single room he walks into, he goes, "Oh, there's nothing in here."
Fucking hell! My foot just gone to the fucking floor. Like, look at
there's
that.
Nothing,
mate.
There's nothing in here. 12-minute video. I watched the whole thing because you sent it to me. And every room he walks into, there's nothing in here, like. No, sell it into me.
Yeah.
Make something up.
Look at the infrastructure. Look at the wires and the wall and stuff. And he's like, he only gets excited when he sees a safe. There's a safe in here. They've been in the safe, like.
There's nothing in here.
I'm going, mate, that building's been closed for a long time. Yeah. And whoever owns it will have got into the safe.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. There's not going to be any money left. It's just the interesting stuff. Beer mats. Have a look at the beer mats. Have a look at the old posters, the acts, the bands that used to be there. Let's have a look.
Have a look at the bodies.
Have a look at the bodies. They did find, I think in the Hill Carter, or maybe the audience cinema, they found it was like a doll. It was like kind of like, looked like a toddler. It was a doll fully dressed up, just lying on the floor. And it did look like a corpse of a child.
Oh, weird.
It was genuinely chilling.
Do you remember a year or so ago, we found a story about some guys who went and buried all the old Soviet money.
Yes.
And they went to try and find it. And they actually found it.
Leningrad, wasn't it?
Yeah, they actually found it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. It's worthless though, right? I think.
No, yeah.
I think it was worthless.
That's amazing. If you found any money in the audience safe, again, it went out of business ages ago. Don't worry about it.
But we're still using pounds though, crucially, aren't we, Pete?
Yeah, but if you had £10 notes, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
It wouldn't be, you couldn't exchange that old £10 note for anything, could you?
Yeah, you take it into the bank, brother.
No, that was years ago.
Take it into the bank, brother.
It doesn't exist.
You can do that. By the way, you know Thomas Cook got
hit the wall.
Went under.
Mm.
That was terribly sad story. People lost their jobs and people's hard work and people's holidays have been ruined and all the rest of it. And I'm not making light of that. But it's quite interesting though, because when I was in Santorini in May, I was lying on the bed just checking my phone.
Go on, help, it's too hot.
And yeah, and it came, I was in my little capsule. It doesn't let any UV light in. There was a bit on the phone saying, oh, Thomas Cook's in danger of going under. Right. Then.
Yeah.
I was actually worried about it. Mm. And I was on holiday with my family. I showed my mum. She was like, oh yeah, we'll probably be all right. And we never heard of anything again. And that's come back and that's happened. Terrible news.
Sounds like there's been, sticking plasters being put over that for a few months now.
Yes, exactly. Any interest in the Rugby World Cup, Peter? Any interest in the people who like rugby?
I enjoyed, my mate Gav posted a picture of S4C, which is the Welsh, is it a commercial channel? I think it is a commercial channel, isn't it? It's not a BBC channel. They posted on their Twitter page the most generic kind of Japanese wank bit of top.
I was going to ask you about this. And what is this set that ITV have set up? Is that problematic?
What do you mean, the set?
It's very stereotypical kind of Japanese, here's a dojo type thing.
Right, yeah. Well, the thing that you kind of notice about the Japanese is they don't like necessarily give a shit about that kind of thing. They don't really know what's xenophobic. They don't really know what's racist because them themselves are, you know, inherently from their systems and their closed offness.
They don't have any kind of immigration in
Wales. They don't have any immigration, so they don't really know what's racist and what isn't racist. But they don't necessarily give a shit about, like, for example, I've spoken about on the Abroad in Japan podcast with Chris Broad, another Chris Takano of a podcast, but like the Hello Kitty Avril Lavigne video. She's got a big fan base over there. They fucking love her because she's, you know, spent a lot of time there, and you know it's a big market for those kind of saccharine pop rock kind of acts.
Yeah.
And she did a song called Hello Kitty where she just went down Harajuku's high street, found a shitty sweet shop and did a little fucking dance. She must be in her 30s now, probably.
Right, yeah.
But like, you know, she did a little dance and did, you know, fucking Hello Kitty, like all that. Like, but used, you know, the Harajuku girl kind of Gwen Stefani thing. Whatever happened to Harajuku girls? What are they? Where did they go?
Not sure.
They use that kind of like iconography in the image. Like, and everyone in the West got a little bit upset about it and sort of went, this is very stereotypical. This is just xenophobic. You know, you got the thing. But fundamentally, it's not high culture, is it? Like, at the end of the day, it's not high culture, like Hello Kitty and
so you would argue that it can't be appropriated, is
that? Well, it can't be appropriated because it's a commercial enterprise. Things like the dojo and stuff, obviously, yeah, got a lot of history there. But, you know, having a kind of like doing Harajuku girls dressed up as, you know, schoolgirls and doing all that shit, that's a modern commercial enterprise.
So they don't give
it?
A shit, basically.
And they particularly do not give a shit. I think with the dojo stuff, when you get stuff like that, I've not seen the set, so I can't comment, but and also I'm not Japanese, but I would think they don't have that much of a problem with that kind of thing, which is interesting, I've always found.
Right, okay. Because I don't know myself, there's been some comments made about it, but yeah, it did look a little bit.
Oh, the S4C Twitter header was fucking hilarious. Like, yeah, just like people dressed in like old kind of shogun, all of like the Horst and stuff, and like rugby stars like dressed in like shogun clothes and stuff. It was it was shite. It was absolutely shite.
Another story that caught my eye is this story coming out of Indonesia, where the skies in one of the provinces there, of course, Indonesia is a hugely populated country. Mm. What goes under the radar, Indonesia, in my opinion, the skies have turned like brutally and vividly red due to forest fires.
It's hard to dance with the devil on your back.
Well, quite. But when there's forest fires, you tend to think of it being hazy and smoggy and it blocking out the sun. But look at this photo of
it's like a
dark room in a photography
studio. It's like an infrared camera picture. If you take a picture in infrared, it's very pink.
Yeah.
Very pink, very red.
Yeah, so that's quite interesting. Anyway, wow. It does look a bit like some of those photos you saw of Mars. So check that out if you get a chance. Let's take a quick break, Peter. When we come back, we'll do some emails.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
That's what we do, baby. Jerry Halliwell there.
There she is. Jake's been in touch. Says, hello, Luke and Pete. Hello at lukeandpeteshow.com, of course, is the email address. Please do get in touch about anything we talked about or anything you'd like us to talk about. But Jake's done that, and he says, hello, Luke and Pete. My two-year-old son has recently got very into dinosaurs. Your niece, Pete, famously, who we heard earlier in the week, doesn't like dinosaurs.
Owns dinosaurs, hates them.
Yeah, most kids love them. He says, therefore, I bought him a number of dinosaur toys and books to play with and read, and we generally get all the dinosaurs out and create different scenarios where they run around and occasionally battle. Therefore, you can imagine how stupid I felt when I discovered last week that the Stegosaurus was in fact a fossil when the T-Rex began roaming the Earth. I saw this on Twitter originally and verified it online. There are 80 million years separating the two species. Therefore, a fight between a T-Rex and a Stegosaurus is technically less accurate than a fight between T-Rex and Hitler. I tried to find a toy Hitler for my son's collection, but no luck as yet. I thought you might find that interesting. Cheers, Jake. There's a vast amount of separation between the two, a lot of different species of dinosaurs, but we just tend to bracket them all up. That's like, I think I'm right in saying that vast majority of the species, if not all the species in Jurassic Park, didn't exist in the Jurassic era. I think most of the more exciting carnivorous dinosaurs are Cretaceous dinosaurs, not Jurassic ones. And then obviously the period before that was the Triassic, which is different again.
You had a bit of a giggle with it.
Yeah, they're just taking the piss, mate, to be honest. They're taking the fucking piss.
Piss take.
Yeah.
Well, they all got in the kitchen, so...
No accuracy. Next thing you know, they're opening doors.
Imogen has got in touch. Hello, both.
Oh, I bookmarked this to read as well.
Well, I've got it.
It's rare.
It's rare.
Imogen, that's when you know it's a good email, because both of us have separately decided to read this
one. In the Venn diagram of Pete and Luke's interests.
I'll read it next.
As a long-time listener of the pod, I decided to treat myself a re-listen to your now extensive back catalogue. Imo, come on. Come on, you've got better things to do than that.
It's nothing if not extensive.
In episode 23, Sunday Brunch with Danny Dyer, Rick Edwards was talking about his experiences of sniffing ammonia, which he described as the strongest alkali. As the chemistry pedant that I am, I felt the need to write in to correct this and tell you that there are, in fact, many other strong alkalis known as super bases. Love that.
So I would learn at school, Imogen, I know you can't talk back to me, but I'm talking to you directly, that the highest number pH was the highest number alkaline. I thought that was about 13 or 14 or something. And that strongest acid is down at pH 1, right? And water is neutral, which is around about 7, 7.5, I think.
That sounds about right.
It's the extent of my chemistry knowledge.
That's all we got.
And if anything else I know, I learnt off Breaking Bad.
This got me thinking about other silly chemical names, some of which I will now regale you with. A disclaimer, I am only an undergrad chemistry student, and ask that any of your other listeners are kind to me if I make mistakes. Here goes.
Of course.
Arsehole.
Listen,
come on.
You don't have to worry about it. If you bring in a chemical called arsehole, you're in safe hands.
A ring compound containing arsenic, and although they are not commonly found in a pure form, there is a German academic paper whose title translates to Studies on the Chemistry of the Arseholes.
Also, a ring compound.
Nice. Exactly. Adamantane is not named after adamant, but rather after the Greek adamas, meaning indestructible, as it has the same structure as diamond, famously a hard, near indestructible material. Cummington is a mineral discovered in the magnesium-rich rocks of Cummington, Massachusetts, in 1824. Erotic acid. Vitamin B13 is known as such due to generations of chemists thinking they were funny. It was originally orotic acid. If you add another carbon to it, it becomes homoerotic acid. Nice. Moronic acid is found in the pistachio resin, which has been found in shipwrecks and inside ancient Egyptian relic jars. Its name comes from the similar hydroxyform morolic acid found in the heartwood of the mora tree. From there, it was only a short jump to the much more silly name, moronic. And finally for now, penguinone looks like a penguin. The structure in a diagram.
Oh, right.
And it's frankly a lot easier to pronounce than, 3445 tetramethyl cyclohexa-24-diene-1-1.
Yeah.
These are only a few of the silly names of chemistry, and with new compounds being made all the time, there are infinite possibilities for many silly names in the future. Well, let's hear it for Luke and Peter Dextry.
Yeah, love that. There's also one, it puts me in mind of one I'm sure I read about when I was doing some mad kind of research for this show a while ago. I think there's one called Buckminster Fullerene as well.
Buckminster Fullerene, nice.
Because they named it after because it looked like, similar to the penguin one, looked like in structural format, it looked like the shape of a kind of geometric shape that Buckminster Fuller used to design or something like that. So, because I think it comes down to the scientists that discover it, right?
I think so, yeah.
Which is why it's so disappointing.
You can't be mad though. You can't just make stuff up. Just I think you should the, be just able for to. The shits and the giggles.
But you know, like astronomers only name like planets and stars like 564B-5. It's like it's a waste of time.
Yeah,
I know it's a, probably some kind of cataloging system, but let's have a bit of fun with it. Like 199.56. this is an interesting one. I thought would pique you your interest, Pete, from Megan in New Jersey.
Pique my blinder.
Yeah, this will pique your blinder. Hello, gents. Beloved fast food chain KFC is known to come up with some bizarre ideas for products, furthering their brand over the years. Examples include a fried chicken scented sunscreen, lip balm, and finger-licking nail polish.
Mm.
Do you know about those?
I knew about the lip balm.
I'm happy to report they're back on their bullshit, this time with a dating simulation game launching on Steam on September 24th, which was this week. In it, you play as a culinary student studying alongside a young Colonel Sanders, looking for love and to possibly become a business partner to the good man, the Colonel.
Mm.
There are 9 characters, including a dog who's a professor at the school, because why not? And allegedly various game mechanics like cooking battles and secret endings are promised, resulting in multiple hours of gameplay. And Megan includes a link. You're on Steam, right, Pete? You probably download games on Steam. Can you download the KFC game? Let us know what it's like.
I can do. I fear that we might have been had by some kind of clever video game PR. I would like to investigate this woman to see if she works for a PR company.
Well, I'll click on the link.
Yeah.
KFC is apparently creating a Colonel Sanders dating sim. Finger licking good.
Yeah, it went all over the gaming world last week.
Oh, you reckon it's just like a marketing ploy?
Well, it is a marketing ploy, but it's also, you know, created a video game. Apparently it's pretty good.
Would you be up for it?
I don't generally like those kind of talking book kind of games. Those kind of, they're usually like manga characters and you're sort of like romancing people and stuff.
Because it reminds you of your own shortcomings.
Doki Doki Literature Club came out maybe 2 years ago, and that was like a subversion of the art. I recommend that. This might be good as well, though.
There are only 2 genres of video game.
Okay.
Super Mario World, Super Mario Kart.
Right, okay.
Driving.
Does it have a kart in
platforming.
It? Does it have a platformer? I wouldn't mind you, like, there's a Twitter page saying, there's a Twitter account that checks out every game possible going and asks, can you pet the dog? If there is a dog in the game, can you pet it? Presumably you couldn't pet a professor.
Yeah.
Because he's a teacher, and that's very disrespectful in this particular game. But it just basically goes through every game. So can you pet the dog? And even there's been some games which have come out. And because of this Twitter page, Can You Pet the Dog, has become quite popular and everyone retweets their content, they've actually gone back and added a dog petting option into the game, like patched in after release.
I also don't think that just because the dog's a professor doesn't mean he doesn't want his belly rubbed.
That's a good point, actually.
I mean, you know, you could be as rich and powerful as you want.
You still want your belly
rubbed. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy like an ice pop or something. You know, you don't change, you know, the very essence of the dog won't change.
Good point.
He's probably a very good boy.
Probably likes KFC, I'd imagine, those bones.
Oh, mate.
Delicious. I had...
Them bones, dry bones.
Doubled up on the gravy last night on the KFC. 12 spicy wings, doubled up on the gravy, and I got some mash on top of the fries, which was unwelcome at 3 a.m. when my stomach went, Peter, we have to talk. But it was... I might actually switch to mash and gravy instead of the... instead of a common.
So KFCs fries. In this country don't often do mash. So that one does it? Which one is it?
Yeah, I don't know. It was on Deliveroo, so...
Who was it that we both know that didn't know that KFC did gravy?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it might have been Sam from Set Meals.
Really?
Which is a massive gap in his knowledge.
He didn't know that they did gravy, right?
I might be doing him a disservice, but it was someone we both know. They were stunned to hear that KFC did gravy, and they promised to go and investigate it. KFC gravy is magnificent. It's absolutely
nice and peppery.
Fantastic.
Delicious.
Speaking of genres of games, it always reminds me of the conversation you would have, if people listening, if they're old enough, in the 90s, when it became, music was becoming popular again. You had Britpop, you had all this American rap music, you had all this other stuff. And I think it discombobulated some of the older generation.
Yeah.
But they were still young enough to sort of go to the pub, and they'd be like your mate's older brother or your mate's dad or whatever. And every bloke of that kind of ilk used to just say, you talk about music in a pub in the 90s, they would say, oi, listen, son, there's only 2 genres of music, good and bad. All right. And that's what you reminded me of with the video game conversation there. Let's do one more email from William.
Okay.
This is sometimes I prioritize emails that are important clarifications to things we've talked about in the past.
Mm.
And William says, hi guys, just a quick clarification on the petrol pumping palaver in the US.
Yes.
It is only illegal to pump your own gas in New Jersey.
Oh.
Lots of people think that you get your gas pumped for you in the US. Apparently, it's only in New Jersey. Stemming from the 1949 Retail Gasoline Dispensing Safety and Regulations Act, which states, because of the fire hazards directly associated with dispensing fuel, it is in the public interest that gasoline station operators have the control needed over that activity to ensure compliance with appropriate safety procedures, including turning off vehicle engines and refraining from smoking while fuel is dispensed. Mm. Now, to my knowledge, Oregon also had a similar law that was recently repealed. I only know this because of the Twitter meltdown I witnessed with many young men and women complaining about having to get out of their car on cold January mornings to have to pump their own gas. All the best. Keep up the good work, William.
Tragic. I guess nowadays, with wearable tech and everything's got a little battery in it, you'd be in a situation where pretty much everything, a Bluetooth headset, an Apple, like a smartwatch, you couldn't wear while you're pumping gas, because obviously anything that has a battery in it has the capacity to spark and therefore ignite the flames.
But how likely is it to happen, though?
Well, you could say the same thing about the smartphone, couldn't you? Because you're not allowed to take a phone call, are you, because of the possibility of a spark.
But I thought it was one of those things that, like, you're not allowed to use your phone on a plane. I mean, like, it's kind of just one of those things, right? You can do it.
Well, no, yeah.
It's just but a saying, isn't it?
Well, no, because they think that that's going to legitimately interfere with the... And I suppose the early mobile phones were analogue, so they would just be...
I've taken as many flights with you as anyone has, and you are always absolutely dismissive in your attitude towards turning your phone off.
Yeah, it's bollocks.
But is it bollocks in a gas station as well?
No, because you can still... Because anything with a battery... Well, I'm no scientist, and I don't know how often sparks come out of smartphones, but I presume that is why you're not allowed to use your phone, because of the possibility of an electromagnetic spark.
Why is it bollocks on a plane then?
Well, because if it makes a spark, it's not going to
necessarily
explode.
No, but why do they
stop
you on a plane then?
Because in the early years, I presume, of phones contacting mobile phone towers, it perhaps had the capacity to interfere with the communications between the control tower, ATC, and the planes themselves. Yeah. But even then, perhaps they didn't. They just wanted to make sure that the pilot had a clear line of communication with the people on the ground.
James Horncastle of this parish of on the continent, he was flying to, I think, Florence a couple of weeks ago, and he got in his chair, in his seat, ready for takeoff. Dozed off, woke up as they were landing.
Yeah.
Thought he had dozed off for like hours. Turns out 25 minutes into the flight, they had turned around, gone back to London because the radio was faulty.
Right.
And his flight got cancelled. So it was really disorienting.
That's annoying. Yeah. We're waiting on going, oh, I'm done. That's lost quick. Half an hour.
Imagine the joy of that. Imagine if it's a long haul flight.
Yeah.
I've slept for 8 hours. No, 20 minutes. Anyway, let's get out of here. Hello at Luke and Pete. Should I get in touch? If you want to come see us perform with Marcus and Jim as part of Football Ramble Live, we're out around the country from tonight. Taken in London this weekend, then we're off to places like Liverpool, to Northampton, to Newcastle, to Sheffield, all sorts of places.
Aye.
Then we're off to the US. So do check it out, ramblelive.com, for tickets, and we'll see you on Monday.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.